Welcome back to Cocktails and Classics. My name's Dylan. Joining me, as always, are Ben and Cam. And this week, we did 1985's Clue. Kind of a cult classic comedy mystery, I guess. It's a movie based on the board game Clue. And to kick everything off and get everybody in the right mood, we're going to take to this week's cocktail. And Ben found us this week's cocktail again.
Doing the work. Doing God's work here. Cocktails and Classics. By that, I mean I did a quick Google search and found what I could make at home. So, this week's cocktail is the Colonel Mustard. It is 1 ounce of gin, 2 ounces of lime juice, 1.5 ounces of peach brandy, a dash of spicy Dijon mustard, and you add all of those ingredients and some honey into a shaker, strain it into a glass, and then you can garnish it with lime and mint. It's very good. It's alcohol forward. I didn't use as much honey as I probably should have. That's on me. I would recommend going a little bit more. I just kind of went like, I don't know. I used a squeeze bottle because, you know, I'm not some sort of fancy boy who probably has some sort of glass bottle honey shit. So I gave it 2 good squeezes from the honey bear and shook it up.
Oh, God, the honey bear's the worst. It's not even actual probably honey.
What? It's not honey?
I mean, it's very low grade honey. There's a pretty good Netflix documentary about, what is that called? All right, well, I looked that up. Ben, how's the mustard in there? That seems kind of like an interesting ingredient.
I mean, it's there. It's not like super, like I was kind of worried, but I don't want to say, you know, like how you're worried when you put an egg white in a cocktail that it's going to be kind of like, it's going to give it that weird kind of texture.
Yeah.
That was my biggest fear. No, it doesn't. It kind of just kind of mixes throughout. I mean, you get a little bit of the mustard flavor through it. And because it's a Dijon, even then, it's not like super, you know, strong stadium mustard throughout. But it's just kind of a note of it. It's not like
it's not
super
like that
strong
mustard we got in Denver. That was
no
too mustardy.
No, and because you just, I mean, you only add like a, I mean, I literally just like a little dollop of it, not a lot, just because I didn't want it to be super mustardy. But I mean, I guess it really depends. You could, it calls for a dash. Depends how hard and fast or loose you want to play with the wording of a dash. You could go with a big dash, you could go with a little tiny dash, you know. You do you. Most of what I'm getting is a lot of, because of the gin, like, the flavor of gin is kind of a little bit more powerful. I feel mm-hmm. like that's what I'm, like, the juniper is mostly, like, what's coming through. And then because I garnished with the mint at the end, I'm still getting a little bit of mint coming through pretty strong, too.
The Netflix series I was talking about is Rotten. It travels deep into the heart of the food supply chain to reveal unsavory truths and expose hidden forces that shape what we eat. So there's one on like honey, peanuts, garlic, chicken, milk, cod. There's a couple seasons, but the honey one kind of explains that like typically the honey bears is like the lowest form of honey, and it's like cut with like corn syrup or something. So it's like not actual honey. Then I think the garlic one talks about like why you shouldn't get peeled, like pre-peeled garlic, because people just use like their teeth and their feet and shit.
Yum.
But check the show notes below. Get yourself some ingredients to make a Colonel Mustard. You'll get some gin, and I doubt they're going to have Dijon mustard, so you might have to supply that one yourself. But
they might have the peach brandy, though.
True. Check out Clue on Prime Video as of recording. I think it's got less than 14 days once this drops. So if you want to watch along, I'd hurry up and check it out. Clue is a 1985 comedy crime mystery. Currently sits at a 7.2 out of 10 on IMDb. directed by Jonathan Lynn, written by John Landis and Jonathan Lynn. It's the story of six guests who are anonymously invited to a strange mansion for dinner, but after their host is killed, they must cooperate with the staff to identify the murderer as the bodies pile up. It stars Eileen Brennan, Tim Curry, Madeline Kahn, Christopher Lloyd, Michael McKean, Martin Mull.
I feel like this had a lot of people that would be like, it's a cast of, I mean, a couple of big names, and then a lot of people that you'll go, oh, I've seen them before. I've seen them in something. Especially if you've watched, like, older television, you'll be like, oh my god, I've seen them in something. For example, the cook was a nurse on MASH. She was in, like, 170-ish or close to that many episodes of MASH. Like, she was in the entire show. I didn't realize who Martin Mull was at the time. He looked familiar, but I couldn't place him. And I wouldn't have based off of what he looks like now, but if you've seen Arrested Development, he's Gene Parmesan.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Which, like, I wouldn't have put it together because now, like, when you see a picture of him now and he's got, like, the gray beard and everything, like, that's what I think of when I hear his name. I don't think of him with just a mustache, and I don't think of what he looks like as a younger guy. I just always imagine he's looked like that.
I was going to say, like, looking at an updated picture of him, it really makes, like, I'm like, oh, shit, okay.
Yeah, I didn't recognize him, but when I looked at the picture on IMDb, I was like, oh my god, that was him? Huh. I wouldn't have put it, I would not have put it together. Michael McKean, who was in, I can't think of the movie, Spinal Tap. This is Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
I feel like quite a few of the actors have been in, I mean, I don't think we've done a Tim Curry movie, but Christopher Lloyd.
I know on the list is Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Mrs. White did a lot of Mel Brooks movies, Young Frankenstein. She was in Blazing Saddles, another one that's on the list, but maybe we will, maybe we won't do it because we're walking a fine line. Yeah, I feel like they went to, like, the well of comedy actors for the main cast, and then everyone else, they were like, oh, let's find some background players who have done a bunch of different things.
Had anyone seen this before?
I don't think so.
I had seen
bits and pieces, maybe, but...
Wait, what? How do you think so?
Well, it's like, I don't know, like, maybe it was on TV once, but I don't really remember any of it, and I didn't really remember any of the endings, so...
I remember this being on HBO once as a kid, and turning on, like, the last, I don't remember how many minutes of the movie, and spoiler, I obviously, this is what we do here, we talk about the movie, so we're going to spoil it here. I had remembered seeing something in the ending where there were, like, I remember seeing two different versions of how it ended, and in my head I thought there was just, like, four or five, and they never really explained what the actual ending was. They just kind of left it at, like, here's all the possible outcomes of what would have happened. So when I watched it again and saw the ending, and then where there was actually the one that said, here's what really happened, I was like, oh, thank God. They actually do give you a what actually happened
here. Well, the interesting thing about that, though, is that when they played this in the theater, they only played one of the three endings. And it kind of depended on which one you saw.
Hmm.
I wish movies did that. I think that's a cool, very sweet idea. Like, you go and see a movie and you're like, oh, the ending, crazy, right? And they're like, wait, what? No, that's not the ending I saw.
The ending where they all did it was fucking nuts, right? And you're like, what? What? No.
Wait,
no.
What?
Miss Scarlet did it. She did all of it.
Yeah. What? So each of those were all equally valid endings depending on which theater you saw it at in 1985.
I wonder if that actually went over well, though. Like, I know we think the concept is cool, but I wonder if it, like, actually...
Especially pre-internet, I feel like that's a pretty sweet word-of-mouth marketing campaign.
But it does, like, it makes sense, though, because, like, you know, it's based off the board game. So it's like, yeah. Oh, the board game has multiple different endings. Like, you know, it could be different every time.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it's a little weird when you watch all of them back to back to back.
It is interesting. I was wondering, because I knew that about the movie. So when I was watching it, I was like, what ending do they play on here? And turns out the answer is all three of them. I think the last one is definitely the most interesting of them. But
that they all did it?
That they all, like, each of them did it. And one of them was, like, part of the FBI or whatever. And all, well, and also the added twist of the butler actually being Mr. Body rather than, you know, the guy who died.
It was so ridiculous, the when they all did it ending, because it's like, it's the quiet, like, the politician who was like, oh, like, I'm a homosexual and I don't want anyone to find out. And then, like, the very last line of the movie is,
yeah,
and I'm going home to sleep with my wife. You're just like, fuck me. Come on.
Yeah.
Really?
Come on.
That's how we ended it?
I expected a David Caruso yeah scream at the end.
Yeah!
Won't get fooled again.
And I got a clue.
Yeah! I mean, I think in general it was pretty entertaining, but it was just so fucking corny. Like, when he was like, oh, I brought you all something, and he brings them all, like, a candle, like, all the weapons, you know, and they're opening the weapons from the board game. It's just like, oh, fuck, come on, Jesus.
Yeah, they're like, the letters, it's like, your code name is Mr. Plum, and we're only going to use those code names.
That one's at least a little more believable. It's just this guy brought a bunch of weapons, and one of, it was well, like, hey, you get a candlestick, you get a rope, Plum's going to get a gun.
Did he bring them, or was that his house?
No, he brought them.
Yeah, that what I
Mr. That Body wasn't brought their them. Place. His plan was, which makes the third ending not really make sense. But his plan was basically to say, "Hey, if you kill whoever kills this butler guy, whoever kills this butler guy, I don't remember what he said, but."
Basically, one person goes down instead of all of you going down.
Yeah. And
no one's going to know who did it.
Right.
Which really doesn't make sense, because if they just... I mean, I guess technically they like would find out, because they'd be like, he's been blackmailing us. But like, I don't know. It's still just one person going down. But I guess your dirty laundry doesn't get exposed. Right.
Well, that's what I love is the guy who's who gets handed like a revolver... And it's like, yeah, they'll never know who did it. Well, if the guy dies of a bullet wound, obviously like, we're going to know who did it.
Yeah. Or like one was a rope. It's like, all right, you're going to strangle him.
Yeah.
Like a rope. It is funny, too, like the severity. Like it's like oh, yeah, pipe? You get a candlestick, you get a pipe, you get a wrench. Pipe,
wrench, candlestick.
You get a fucking
like, okay.
gun.
Blunt object, blunt force. Okay. Early to mid-1980s, maybe you get away with it. You know? But again, at
the
same
time,
I think
it was even earlier than that, right?
There's also going to be blood. Oh yeah, I think they said the movie took place in like the.
I feel like it'd be like 60s or something.
Yeah, I feel like they said the movie took place in like the 50s. I think it was like, 1954.
It might. Yeah, that sounds at least closer, because it's like because they're dealing with like you know, Red Scare, communism type stuff.
But also Hoover. Like, oh, whoever's holding the bloody object is probably the killer.
I mean. The whole premise is pretty flawed.
Pretty big flaw in the plan.
I mean, the whole thing's fairly flawed.
Once you get past that.
I mean, one of the things I'm kind of annoyed is I feel like... I didn't go back and look, but I feel like a good whodunit movie, you should be able to rewind the film and go back and be like, oh, the clues were there. I just didn't notice them at the time. But I feel like that was not true in this movie at all.
No, they were.
Well, they explained it all
they
to
were.
You.
They were. When he explains it all to you, all that stuff happened.
Okay.
Like when she mentions the recipe, like, oh, this is my favorite recipe. Mm-hmm. She does say that early in the movie.
Well, but
you do see Mrs. White and Evelyn like kind of run into one.
Were they really not there, though? Like, I don't know. I guess I didn't
now,
go
see,
back and
I feel
watch
like
the
that's
tape,
tricky
but...
to do. I feel like they can't do that because of the fact that they did three endings, right?
That's what I'm saying is, like, yeah, they did multiple endings, but... Because I feel like I was kind of looking for that. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like I was kind of being like, okay, who's not here or whatever, and I didn't really see anyone that stood out that was like, oh, so-and-so is obviously not here right now.
Yeah. I did like, though, that they pointed out, like, the motive slash, like, oh, here's the reasoning that this person would know X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have the, oh, Colonel Mustard, like, you see the picture of the stranded automotist? What do they call? What do they
motorist?
List that guy as?
Motorist.
Motorist. Jesus Christ. Completely blanked there. The stranded motorist ended up being Colonel Mustard's, like, driver in the military. Like I said, the throwaway line about this being her favorite, Mrs. White's favorite recipe. Or Mrs. Peacock says that Mrs. White kind of shudders when she sees
casually eating
Evelyn.
Brains.
Wait, who was the one that wasn't there?
Well, it depends on the scene. There was one where it was like Mr. Plum wasn't there.
For the
Professor
cook.
Plum wasn't there or something.
Because how many of them are there?
There's six.
Six. Plus the butler.
Oh, well.
And then also Yvette.
Well, then they're all there, actually.
Right. That's what I'm saying, is I feel like in a lot of these scenes, it's kind of like... The one that makes the most sense is when Yvette kills two of them. And then... what was it? Scarlet then kills her. That's the one that makes the most sense to me. Like...
Yeah.
Because Yvette's, like, that's the most plausible.
Well, yeah, because, again, Colonel Mustard and her split up, so, like... Even though you technically see what she does in that room, then there's like the whole gap of them just not being together. So it would make sense she'd have the
right
the time to move around.
And there were, she was literally not in the rooms when, you know, people died or whatever.
As someone who had never seen this and didn't really know what to expect going in, I was pleasantly surprised. Like Cam said, it is pretty corny, and there is a lot of like, not necessarily like corny humor, but like I feel like easy humor.
There's a lot of corny humor. I mean, like where they're like running back and forth between the rooms, like,
oh, that was so funny.
Like, that's it's funny, but it's also very corny. So, yeah.
Or like, you know, like everyone looking at like Yvette's like cleavage. Like, okay, all right. But I
love the corny joke where they just like slowly shut the door in people's faces. Where the guy's like, no.
Oh, yeah.
And then just like slowly closes the door.
Like, there was a lot of humor in this where I was like, gave a hearty chuckle out loud. I was like, all right, that's a funny joke, you know? Like, just looking through, like, back through some of the quotes where it's like, oh, like, you know, you were jealous of your husband that he was shtupting Yvette. That's why you killed him, too. She's like, yeah, I did kill Yvette. I hated her so much. The flames all over my face.
I love this scene where they're trying to count how many shots are left in the gun.
Oh, my God.
That is good, classic, like, cornball comedy, though. It's just like, no. One at Mr. Body, two for the chandelier, two at the lounge door, and one for the singing telegram. That's not six. One plus two plus two plus one. There was only one shot that got the chandelier. That's 1 plus 2 plus 1 plus 1. Well, even if you were right, that would be 1 plus 1 plus 2 plus 1, not 1 plus 2 plus 1 plus 1. Okay, fine. The point is, there's one bullet left in this gun. Like, just such a good... That's such, like, a good 1950s comedy bit, but is still just a classic fucking bit.
This is, like, peak 80s humor. Just looking back at the quotes.
Yeah.
Where it's like, Professor Plum, you were once a professor of psychology specializing in helping paranoid and homicidal lunatics suffering from delusions of grandeur. Yes, but now I work for the United Nations. So your work hasn't changed?
In all of the endings, too, they mention that communism was a red herring.
Yeah.
All right.
I also love Tim Curry's, like, at the start of the evening, Yvette was here by herself, waiting to offer you a glass of champagne. I was in the hall. I know, because I was there.
Like, is everything all right? Yep, two corpses, everything's fine.
Oh, the other, Miss Peacock's going to pee, or going to the girls' room. Oh, is there a little girls' room in the hall? Oui, oui, madame. And then Miss Peacock goes, no, I just want a power under my nose.
Oh my God. Or like when they have the bodies and they're trying to put them in the chairs, or like on the love seat. And they're like, well, if we lay him back, like the knife's gonna go in further to the back. Well, then let's just lay him over the edge, and like fumbling with the fucking bodies the whole time.
I also love when they're like, who's on the phone? Why are you receiving calls from J. Edgar Hoover? That's right. The head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Why is J. Edgar Hoover on your phone? I don't know. He's on everybody else's. Why shouldn't he be on mine?
Man, I feel like I need to watch more like Tim Curry movies. Has he done like much? Like, I have seen that one. But like Full Blood like comedies, has he done many others? Because like, he's so funny in this movie.
Mm-hmm. He is, but I feel like he normally plays like, I feel like he's normally very much kind of a character actor. Like, he's not normally the star of a movie.
I guess it depends on who you're rooting for in It.
Well, I mean, okay, the like clown? It, but even then, technically, is the clown that was a like a made-for-TV movie, I think.
Yeah.
So I mean, it wasn't like he starred in like this blockbuster comedy or this blockbuster movie.
Or I mean, even in like Rocky Horror Picture Show, you know, he's in like makeup and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like that's like his biggest. That's obviously like his biggest thing, but when I think of the stuff he's done, I think of mostly either it's all between like voiceover work, because that's what he's done for the past like 20 something years.
Nigel Thornberry.
I mean, he's done just a bunch of other stuff outside of that too, but like I think of a lot of that. I mean, realistically, I'm looking at his IMDb page. He's been doing voiceover work since like the early 90s?
Like early
1991?
90s, like. Yeah.
Wow, he was Darth Sidious in the Clone Wars.
Yep. He was in, I know he did some voices. He was actually, interesting fun fact, let's just tie this all back to Batman because that's what we do here. He was supposed to be the original voice of the Joker in Batman the Animated Series.
Interesting.
There's a couple different, like, stories floating around as to why he didn't end up doing it. There one being that his voice was deemed too scary. They showed the head of the network showed the show to his son with Tim Curry voicing the Joker, and that his son was too afraid of him. So they were like, okay, that's too much. Another rumor that went around was that he did the voice, but it hurt his like vocal cords too much, so he couldn't actually do like several takes for a full episode. So they didn't, he didn't do the part full on. But it is kind of an interesting thing that's kind of how that played out. He could have been the voice of the Joker instead of Mark Hamill, which ended up playing the character from 1992 to like, I think he's still
today,
doing it.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I've always wondered that, like how, voice actors like do their work for so long. Like, I feel like they have to like either find a voice that doesn't harm your throat that much, or do you just deal with it and like honey tea and take care of it later?
I mean, I guess it probably depends. I mean, realistically, if you're coming up with a character's voice, you don't want it to be something that you can't do for an extended time. Like, I feel like if you're, you know, you're committing or you're auditioning for something, you make sure whatever you're doing is something you can do for, you know,
ever,
day in, day out. It is crazy that's, I mean, from, like, 1990, I mean, hell, even, like, heck, this has him being a voice in Fantastic Max starting in 1988. So, I mean, he kind of transitioned into doing, like, animated voiceover work in the late 80s. Like, that's insane. Especially because if you played a lot of his stuff, you might not even realize that it's Tim Curry.
Well, when Cam was like, Nigel Thornberry, I was like, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
Yeah. that's like one of his big, that's like his big one. I said he's done stuff on everything. Like most animated shows, he's done some sort of voice for. But it is crazy to me that he really never became like a star in multiple comedies.
Like after watching this movie, I was like, damn, like I need to watch some more. Cause it, you know, it's got a little bit of everything. It's got like some wit, some like lines. It's got a lot of, physical comedy, slapstick. So I was like, man, I should check this out. And, I guess I won't
really
get to.
There aren't
really
any other options out there. Yeah. Unless you want to watch it again.
Were you guys kind of like pleasantly surprised, or was it like, you know, this is kind of what I expected? Because Ben kind of pitched it as like a cult classic to me a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I think it's very okay. I think when you think of board game movies, it does, like, those are usually absolute dog shit. But this one's fine. I mean, this one's all right. It's entertaining. Like, it's not super good, but it's like okay. But it's also not super bad either.
What other board game movies are there?
Battleship, I think.
There is Battleship. I'm trying to. I think there might be others, but
I would say Jumanji, but there's not like it wasn't based off a board game. I think they made the board game after.
Yes, that's true. Looks like there was also, it's not a board game, there was a Dungeons & Dragons movie.
Well, yeah, I knew that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm mostly thinking of Battleship, I guess.
usually board game movies are dog shit, and I'm like, this is like one of the only ones I can think of that even exists.
There's Candyland, The Great Lollipop Adventure.
Is that like animated or?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just thinking.
Now
like
we're
another...
just grasping it.
There's a game. There's a game about the game about Go.
What?
There's a game called. There's a movie called World Wars, but it's like surrounded by Scrabble.
I would be interested to like what other movie or what other game you could make into a movie.
Monopoly. It's like a Wolf of Wall Street movie, but it's like really dark about the world of corporate real estate.
You know, I think especially like I feel like in the past like 10 years we've kind of entered a board game renaissance. There's so many board games out there that I feel like you could easily make any of the new ones.
But some of them are
Betrayal.
But that one's like based off of like other.
I mean, it's based off of some lore, I guess. Like Eldritch Horror is based off of Eldritch lore.
It's kind of just like The Haunting of Hill House or like those sort of movies where it's got
themes and from there, but
I think realistically I'm talking like classic board, what classic board games you could
classic board games
don't break
okay,
the ice.
Let's see, we got Clue, we got Monopoly,
Don't Wake
Battleship.
Daddy, that's an old one. Probably make
Operation.
That a movie.
I was going to say Operation is one.
Cooties.
Mousetrap.
Mousetrap.
Is there not a Mousetrap movie? I feel like they
were
talking about
No, you're thinking of
making...
Mouse Hunt.
Or
and
Rat
that
Race.
Is a movie that... Well, Rat Race isn't about actual rats.
I know.
but Mouse Hunt is about them trying to catch them. Who's in that movie? Oh my god, it's gonna drive me nuts now.
Candyland.
Nathan Lane's in it, and I can't remember who else is in that movie.
Chutes and Ladders.
But it was written by... Oh my god. I listened to a
Guess
podcast
who?
With the guy who wrote that movie.
Does Ouija count?
I mean, I saw that on lists. I think it counts.
And then I see Jumanji came out the same time as the board game, actually.
Oh, The Game of Life. Obviously, The Game of Life. That one, I feel like, is so easy.
I feel like that movie would be rather boring.
Well, I feel like you go kind of meta with it, and some dude's having all his like choices. He's like, man, this is really boring. And then it's kind of like, oh yeah, it's all determined by this thing. And like other people just, you know, yeah, you can so literally change the cards you're dealt.
The Truman Show?
but, I mean, kind of, but. Yeah, Monopoly. Risk. Does Risk count? I mean, that's basically Battleship with like a bunch of extra steps.
You know, it's really hard to make a movie based off of a resource management game, and all of these sound like resource management games.
They all are. Ooh, Pandemic? That would be a fun one.
Oh my god.
Oh, too soon. Yeah. Too soon.
See, the issue I feel like is, and maybe this is just all board game based movies that I would be thinking of, is like you can go with like the general concept of like you know, like Monopoly or Life or whatever, where it's like, oh yeah, like, you know, you're just making life choices or you're like selling real estate, but then you have to like deviate from the game fairly quickly. Like you use it as like a setup, and then it goes like, you know, like Life, for instance, like Cam, you said it's like super meta or something, where it's like, you know, maybe you unlock the ability to spin and
kinda
make
like,
choices at random.
Kind of like Free Guy, if you guys have seen that one.
That's what I was thinking.
I mean, I get that. It is interesting how closely looking at board games, how strictly Clue sticks to the source material of the board game, where it has the characters and the different weapons and the different rooms, and they're like, we have to figure out which room Mr. Body was killed in and with what weapon and who did it. It's like, that's literally the game.
Well, and it's also just like the secret passages that connect which room to which room is also like,
yeah,
I feel like that's also straight out of the, yeah,
it is. Yeah, it is straight out of the game.
I to answer your original question of
you know, scattergories
of how I kind of my reaction to it or what I was thinking. I was honestly shocked how well they made this weird comedy whodunit hybrid. Like, honestly, the entire time I was trying to figure out who the killer was, and I kept picking up on the little clues, but it was like, oh, this just leads it to be like, it could be any of them. There really isn't like a, oh, this is who it is, or, you know, there was no real overwhelming kind of thing, which made the ending of, you know, it being kind of everyone made sense. But yeah, I honestly was really impressed at the way that they were able to intertwine this weird slapsticky vaudeville comedy and intertwine it with this whodunit mystery and it actually work. Because when you hear that phrase together at a pitch meeting, so imagine a Charlie Chaplin comedy mixed with a whodunit mystery. You'd get fucking laughed at.
Yeah.
No one's gonna go, yeah, let's make that movie. And yet they did, and it's good.
I feel like the whodunit part is a little bit weak. Like, because of the fact that they had multiple endings, I feel like the lead up to it was a little weak, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, okay, but like, there's no, I mean, other than like her saying that, I feel like there's not a ton of evidence throughout the movie to suggest who did it. Because they left it open-ended. I mean, that's kind of in the spirit of the game, and I get that, but I do feel like the whodunit angle is a little weak.
I'm just glad they didn't do the fucking cop-out of, oh, the butler did it.
Yes. Well, and in the only one where the butler did do it, he wasn't actually the butler, though. He was actually the blackmailer the whole time, and he had killed his butler.
Which is a line I love at the beginning of the movie when Colonel Mustard asks him what he does. And he's like, I'm the butler. Oh, so what do you do?
Yeah.
I buttle.
Three of us had not seen this film, so you're going to get three fresh ratings on Clue. Cameron, kick it off.
All right. I'm going to give this Corn Fest a 6 out of 10. I think it's all right. I wish it was a little more mystery forward. I mean, it technically is, but I do think that like none of the stuff really matters as much. And because of the fact that they had multiple endings, they kind of had to do it that way. But the movie was so short anyway, I feel like they could have just gotten away with like doing one really good ending. So that just leaves it as like kind of a comedy, with a little whodunit on the side, I guess. And the comedy was fine. I mean, it was campy, you know, humor. I think it's okay. So I give it a 6 out of 10.
I am kind of torn on this one. I think I'm going to give it like a 6.5. I'm torn between a 6 and a 7. Look, is this an end all be all like have to watch movie? No. But if you're a fan of kind of campy comedy, then this is right up your alley. It's got a lot of... Honestly, this movie feels like... It feels very Mel Brooks-y to me.
Yeah.
Like, it does feel like a Mel Brooks murder mystery movie, where it's just got, like, a bunch of gags that don't make sense, but you still laugh at them. You know, the cop walks in, and... You know, they're making out with the dead bodies. He walks into the other one and the guy's holding a bottle. He's like, oh, he's dead drunk. Oh, yeah, well, we'll make sure he's not leaving here. He's not leaving here by himself, that's for sure. Just like, okay, just stuff that is so, it's clever and also stupid at the same time. I think Conan O'Brien said that it was the thing he strived for, to be smart and stupid at the exact same moments. And I think this movie does that, where, like, it's the way that they do it is so smart, but also you go, God, that is so dumb, that it's really quite clever. The whodunit part, yes, I think if they just did one ending, they could have kind of played the whodunit a little bit more. But also for the fact that, like, as a marketing strategy to do 3 different endings is really, it's a pretty cool idea, especially, like we said, pre-internet, where, like, you can't just go and look up, oh, what's the other ending? Or you can't just wait a couple weeks or a couple months to watch the other endings on YouTube. Like, you actually just have to go see what the other endings were. I thought it was a really cool idea. It's not a movie that I'm going to tell anyone that, like, you haven't seen it? Oh my God, you have to watch this. But it is one that I would say if I found out, like, you like that kind of campy movie and you hadn't seen it, then check it out. Yeah, 6.5 out of 10. Clue.
I don't know. Like, I enjoyed it. It was a bit long for my taste, I will say. The shtick is funny kind of until it's not. And it kind of, like, overstays its welcome a little bit. I do really enjoy a lot of the humor. Like, there's some good, like, just... goofy jokes, or like they'll put people in a scenario where there's like a joke waiting to happen. I do like the corny humor and like the very 80s feel it gives me. It kind of reminds me of, you know, Caddyshack or like Airplane or those sort of movies. And I mean, seeing that the story is by John Landis definitely makes sense. You know, I'm going to be right there with you guys. I think a 6 is pretty adequate for this film. Like, it's not going to blow you away, but it's going to, like, you know, it's going to be a fun evening. If you enjoy this episode, don't forget to rate and subscribe. Check us out on Instagram at Cocktails and Classics Pod. And hit up those Drizzly and Casker links below. Let us know what you think of your Colonel Mustard. Check us out next week as we review another classic film. And as always, watch responsibly.